And 3, 2, 1.
Are we live, Steve?
Not quite.
Live.
Okay, let's get to it here. April 17th. All right, good afternoon, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Kalk. We're meeting for a work session today. It is, what day is today? Thursday, April 17th, approximately 3 p.m. Our work session on case number PU11-696, Basin Electric's AVS to NESA 345 KV transmission line. Just set the stage, I guess, a little bit. The last meeting, I had an order prepared, ready to vote. My colleague, Commissioner Fedorchuk, asked to hold it over to spend some more time on it. Quite honestly, I'm certainly happy to entertain some nuances in some word phraseology, if you will, but the order, I'm pretty comfortable with it, so I'll just set the stage on that and turn it over to Commissioner Crispin, then we'll let you carry it off, Julie.
I have no opening comments.
Okay.
Jerry, do you have an extra copy of the latest order version? I neglected to bring it. Brought all this stuff and not that.
I have an extra copy. Thank you.
Anything else, sir?
Nope, that's it.
Okay, Commissioner Fedorchuk, you asked for the work session, so it's your nickel.
Absolutely, and thanks for coming, both of you. It's not much of a work session if I'm all by myself. The reason I wanted to get together again is I have gone through the records, all of the filed exhibits, late filed exhibits, gone through the transcript from the hearings, and sort of what I wanted to do was go through some of the main areas of concern that were expressed at the public hearings, because we didn't really spend a work session doing that. We sort of got right into the order, and I wanted to go through all the major areas of concern that were expressed at the hearing and talk about how we're addressing those in this project. And so I have narrowed them down into categories and just wanted to walk through and mostly ask staff to follow up on some of the things that were brought up in the hearings. So
if I could, Julie, a thought that the just what you're talking about now, oftentimes the reason I wouldn't go through with it, all of us, is before I even put together the order, I go through this, do the same thing you're talking about with the staff. So that's why we didn't do that. But I'm happy to do that now as a group.
Yep. So the first area that I wanted to talk about, and was probably the biggest area of public interest and public comment, is the Kildare Mountain, the Kildare Mountains and the Kildare Mountain Battlefield. And there were basically four different areas of concern. One was the battlefield impact, the impact this would have on the battlefield, the need to consult with the tribes, moving Gumbo Creek Station and considering alternative routes. Those were sort of the things that came up. Jerry, I just wanted you to walk through. We did receive from the State Historical Society a letter back in September, kind of charting a path forward on this issue, and some of the things that they called for, we've actually included in our order, and we're the way I understand it, making our order subject to the work of the State Historical Society and their review. I think that's appropriate. They are the cultural experts in the state, and they know far more about what is or isn't impacted than I certainly would. So can you just update me on the status of their work, Jerry, and tell me, I feel like there's a little bit of a chicken and egg thing going on here where they can't complete their work now for some reasons. They can't get access to the land. And so if we were to wait till they were done, I mean, it would be kind of impossible for us to wait for them to be done because they can't get done until we get a route. Is that a correct understanding?
Somewhat. They have most of the easements through there already. And my understanding is that there's just one easement that they didn't get through there. And so I think they've probably got some difficulties there. I don't know what their situation is with that. I understand that the magnetomic surveys have either been done or they're being completed now. The substation, you recall, they pulled that out of the application before we went up there. And the other studies, a visual study from the battlefield, and then there were supposed to be an archaeological studies at the sites. I don't know the status on those. I do know, though, that where they're at is all of the parties, interested parties, have gotten together, and there's a programmatic agreement that's being drafted and developed. Western, Russ, SHPO, the Forest Service, Basin, the Standing Rock Tribe, the Sisson-Wahpeton, and the Kildare Mountain Alliance, all of those people are involved in this programmatic agreement. And it'll discuss the going forward process of going through this area, and they'll come up with an agreement. I understand that we're probably about a month out on having that agreement in place. I think we're also a month or less out from having the draft EIS issued, that at that point there will be a final EIS. The draft supplemental is already out. But at that point, when that final comes out, there's a 30-day comment period on it. And then in addition to that, you could expect another period of time for the Forest Service to actually issue its special use permit that it won't do until after, it won't consider until after the comment period is over.
Okay. That working group you talked about, what did you call that?
It was just everybody. Parties.
What did you call the agreement they're working on?
Programmatic agreement.
Programmatic agreement. Is that a prelude to the SHPO concurrence?
The SHPO wouldn't expect their concurrence until everything is, all of the surveys are done. The programmatic agreement is, whatever it calls for is taken care of, and everything's pretty much done, I think.
Okay. So what I'm getting at is, we say in this order that this is subject to SHPO concurrence, that no historic properties or sites will be affected. So that will be sort of the final step in all of this, and all these parties will have had a role in that. And so we're not getting ahead of that process with this. Okay.
No, these are all separate jurisdictional processes. If there wasn't a federal nexus, we wouldn't even be concerned about NEPA. I mean, to get to the point.
Right. Yeah, but in terms of the, we'd still be concerned about this, the SHPO designation.
There's
issue on the Kildare Mountain battlefield.
Under the NEPA statute, that they work with the tribes and everybody else, and that's what's going on with this programmatic agreement.
Okay. All right, so our hinging this on the SHPO concurrence allows the experts and the tribes and all these folks to have their say and ultimately basically give their nod to the final route through this area.
Yes.
Okay, Mitch, you look like you want to say something.
No, the SHPO process itself comes, we talk about the class one, class two, class three cultural surveys. When what SHPO has said in this case in their correspondence was, when all the class three cultural resource work is completed, then that the final report goes to SHPO and it discusses any mitigation measures to be taken on any archaeological artifacts found, and then SHPO will review that report as well as, do whatever else it deems necessary in that process. And will then, the ultimate opinion of that report will be nothing will be affected because this is the mitigation we're doing. Chippewa will either concur or not concur with that recommendation.
Okay. And our order is subject to Chippewa concurring that no historic property or sites will be affected.
Correct.
All right. Okay. Let me peek at my other notes on the Kildare Mountain Battlefield here. Okay. All right. I think that's all on that issue. The second one I wanted to talk about was the Badlands. There's a few things in the hearings that came out, and, well, a number of things, but I'm going to narrow them down into the visual impacts, because we don't cross... This project doesn't cross the Theodore Roosevelt National Park. It can't. That's an exclusion area. So, Jerry, what's the nearest? Were you able to find how close does this line come at its nearest point to the park? How far of a distance is that?
I'm passing out is late filed exhibit 33 from the Park Service. Okay. And as you can see, the line is highlighted in pink and runs north-south on the east side of the page. So you can look and see there that the closest that we come to what appears to be part of the park. And the reason I say appears is because if you drive through there, I understand that Highway 85, there's no part of the park east of Highway 85. The fence goes around, and the park is entirely west of 85, but yet the diagrams show the area here in the center in pink, that's the park. It shows it extending to the east of 85. And we're not sure why that is, but somehow or other that might be Forest Service land there or something. So if you looked at the edge of that pink area on this thing here and went straight east from there from the transmission line, you're looking at, a mile and a quarter or so, something like that.
Okay. Can you, since this was one of the exhibits that was discussed during our hearing in Kildare, and then there was some question as to whether it was the most accurate or not based on the line of the transmission line, so Valerie Naylor, the superintendent of the park, refiled this with us. Can you walk through this in terms of how this describes the visual impact of the line, the proposed route, as if you were in the north unit of the park?
Sure. And I had a little bit of trouble understanding this document, too, but I think I've got it now. As you read the very bottom paragraph on the page there, it says, for example, if a 115-foot tall structure were developed in an area shaded dark green, there would be no actual impact to the north unit. So you see there's a legend on the right side of the page, and it shows the percentage of the park that this is visible from. So the green from anywhere, there's 0% of this park that would see it if it was put in the dark green area. As you look down at
those are like valleys? Is that what they must be? Okay.
I think so anyway. So as you look at the line, now first of all, the line, they made that pink. If you look at the legend, it shows proposed power transmission line in pink. So that's just to denote the line that it's pink. They didn't. It doesn't mean whether you can see it or not. The line that's going through there for the line. So if you watch along that line there, you're looking at kind of an olive color as you're on the south section of the line. It says that means from 0 to 10% of the park will be able to see the line. From 0 to 10% of the area in the park, you'll be able to see the line. So as you look up, you see all of this is pretty much in the olive area. There's a little bit of areas that are more yellowish color. And those areas coincide with some ridges. And so you're more visible when you're going over the ridges. And so it looks to me like in the worst spot would be straight across in the center of the diagram. There's a yellow area. There's a ridge there. It's about a mile from the edge of the park that I wondered if that was part of the park. And a mile and a quarter or something. And so in that area, that would be visible from 10 to 20% of this park area. That looks like our worst case spot right there.
How can you tell in the park?
We do not know where in the park it's visible from, just that it's visible from 10 to 20% of the park, of the north unit.
So we're just looking at the line and the parts underneath the line, right? To say that that part is visible in 10 to 20%?
I think you're really...
The land that the line is on, that's the color that indicates how much is visible.
Yeah, see the towers, it says, were 115 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're really looking at is 115 feet above the ground level, if you'll be able to see that, or perhaps more than that. But
so if I'm you're looking at this land, this is all green.
Yeah.
And so that means that because the structures are on green here, when you're in the park you'll see it 0 to 10% of the time.
Yeah.
Versus here it's yellow when on these structures they're on yellow. So when you're in the park you'll see that 10 to 20% of the time.
Or of the area that you're at in the park.
Yeah.
From 10 to 20% of the park area.
Yes. Okay. So that's why the whole park is pink. It's not where you're standing in the park, you see this. It's this, what this line, this.
So if you look at that one spot that is the worst case for that ridge there.
One structure on the top of that ridge.
Yeah, that ridge looks to me like, what, an eighth of a mile? In width?
Mm-hmm.
If that. And so that section right there would be the worst impact according to this map.
Okay, so to summarize that, then your understanding of this chart is that the worst case scenario would be these towers would be visible up to 10 to 20% of the time in certain, depending on where you are in the park.
Yeah.
On a couple.
Well, it would be visible from
10 to 20% of the park. And there's, and the others, the vast majority, because there's maybe, there's a couple other ones south of there that are on yellow.
Yep.
I'm seeing maybe a handful of structures that would be visible 10 to 20% of the time, and the others would be 0 to 10%.
It looks to me, if you were looking at structures, the black dots along the line, there's one structure in the first area we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And there is maybe two structures on the edge of the second area down there in mm-hmm. the yellow.
So three structures that would be visible 10 to 20% of the time.
Yeah, but they might be from different places. So you might see these two and not see the third one, depending on where you're at.
I do have to add, though, that this is an exhibit that it's a good reference to have discussion about, but the viewshed discussion is a dangerous discussion. There's a cell tower that's right on top of outside the town of Medora that you can see through everything that's in needed infrastructure. So I don't know that we're drawing conclusions that maybe aren't necessarily 100% accurate about what you can and can't see, not knowing the methodology of all this. The point to me is that this is well over a mile east of the highway on most of this, so I think it's good, but there's a lot of things that you can see from the park, not just this power line.
I think it shows a minimal impact.
I think it's also important to point out we're talking about a power line. It's not like something with beacons flashing 24 hours a day or something like that.
But your point,
I just want to get the facts out about what this park is saying will be visible. And I think that's what they're saying. This is their document, and they say, you know, you can look at it quickly, and it's hard to draw conclusions. So I think it's helpful for me to narrow it down that there's potentially just three towers that are visible 10 to 20% of the time based on the data from the park, if that's a fair summary.
You know, according to this map, we can deduct that. It was the Park Service's map, and if we take it to be accurate.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this is an issue that comes up pretty often. I think people are understandably interested in the impact that this project would have on the park, and so I want to know that I'm talking about it accurately when I eventually we make a decision on this. Okay. Jerry, is there anything else on that?
I don't think so.
Okay. Then the other issue that came up during the hearing was this idea that if we buried the cable through those areas that you could have no visual impact. And so we asked a lot of questions about that during the hearings, and they filed a study that was conducted by, I think, the Wisconsin Public Utility Commission about burying cables. And Jerry, I was wondering if you could kind of summarize. We have some information in our order on that, but it's pretty it's pretty general, so it's kind of summarize for me what your advice is on the issue of burying the cable, which, quite honestly, after we finished the hearings, I was thinking was a good option to request for a couple miles through that area that we consider having them bury the cable. But what are the technical realities of that?
First of all, it's very hard to bury a big line like that, a 345 kV line, is technically challenging. And so as a result, it will be very expensive.
It's technically challenging in flat ground, let alone the terrain that we're talking with. That's where I looked at it. It's not just flat terrain. We're talking about it's hard to get a truck through some of those areas. Somebody got a guy on a horse.
Right.
So to say 10 times the amount of cost is probably conservative.
And larger impact to the environment.
And then,
so talk about the larger impact, because
the point that I was going to make is that sticking a pole, you know, every 1,000 or so feet or a couple thousand feet in the ground is a lot less impact than digging a trench. And trenching through the Badlands, in particular, with the terrain and stuff that is in there, is going to wreck the place. I mean, it's a whole lot bigger impact than putting poles in.
And in addition to that, you'll have to put these vaults in instead of poles. And these vaults will be every so often. And there was a picture of a vault in one of the studies. If you look at it, it's a huge impact, a big hole in the ground. And I see the burial option as being many, many, many more times the impact environmentally than just an overhead line. Another thing, when this thing is ever to be removed, retired and reclaimed, all you got to do is take the poles out if it's above ground. If it's below ground, all of those vaults are going to be a big job to get out of there, and it's going to be just as much of an impact to take everything out as it was putting it in. So, I don't really think that undergrounding is technically feasible.
I was reading this study, and the study concluded that the underground option is most often used and best suited for urban areas where you can't get the above ground clearance you need versus in a really sensitive environmentally sensitive area.
A project that comes to mind for undergrounding was the Boston Tunnel. They spent billions of dollars on that to get some power lines through the harbor, through the tunnel, and it was mainly to get these lines through urban areas.
It seemed to me the company testified about some of the logistics of actually even getting the cable out to the site, that you had to ship it.
Because you need a thicker cable in order to dissipate the heat from being underground, you end up with much bigger rolls, much bigger spools, and with a lot less cable on them. And so hauling them out there becomes a big job itself, and getting them shipped in and the transportation is a much bigger issue with that kind of a conductor.
Okay. All right. Then my final question on the Badlands segment is, are Forest Service lands exclusion areas or avoidance areas?
I think you have to look and see exactly which lands we're talking about. But I think we're at avoidance areas for this project.
Well, I think the Forest Service's piece through the NEPA and even the permits they have to give is huge, this whole thing. So
update me on that too, Jerry. What's the Forest Service has to provide a permit. Our order, the draft order, is it subject to that as well? Or does that go without being said?
They're a stakeholder inside of NEPA as well, aren't they?
They will need a special use permit to cross the Forest Service lands. And there's a federal process for issuing that. And they need to have the NEPA completed. The EIS needs to be completed and through the comment period. And then we're looking at probably some period after that for the Forest Service issues that permit. That's probably going to be like the last thing that we get.
We've seen those before in cases with crossing the grasslands with some of our pipeline cases. So it's not the first time we've dealt with them.
Mm-hmm. What do we say about that Forest Service permit in our order?
I think it's just generic that they have to file a copy of all required permits.
Okay. But the reality is they need the Forest Service's ultimate say on the Forest Service land, and they will make that determination with or without this RAL permit.
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
And quite honestly, I think that, you know, I'll jump back to the Senator Grand Forks line. The commission, we approved that 3 years ago, and we continue to see modifications of routes, even though it's been approved a long time ago, because when they get out there and things gel together, it's not uncommon to see tweaks along the way. So when the vote comes and hopefully we approve this, then I anticipate we'll see changes along the route. Mm-hmm. It'll just happen, and we'll have to deal with them when they come. Hopefully nothing wholesale, but if it would come, we would deal with it.
All right. Okay, then in the we heard a lot of testimony. I want to say it was almost 2 hours of testimony on Eagles alone on this route. And it kind of concluded, because I reviewed the testimony from Dr. Coyle again, and her remarks were concluded in basically two ways. One, she wanted to avoid macro corridor D and E, which E is not part of this current order, but D is. D is the current preferred route. And then she said her second request was to use the most raptor-friendly equipment. So tell me how that's being accomplished in this order.
There is a set of guidelines out for power line construction, and the main thing you're doing is making sure that the wire is far enough away from anything that's grounded so that the wingspread of the Eagle can't touch both the wire and the grounded position at the same time. As long as it doesn't do that, it can't get electrocuted. There's no path to ground for it. So
we had that line of questioning on record, though, in Williston, because I asked that about what's the average wingtip of an Eagle, what's the average spread in the power line, and that put on the record your point.
And so that's there's a bird protection agency, Avian Power Line Interactive Committee, guidelines that they say that they're going to follow, and we require, well, we find that they're following them in the...
In paragraph 28 there.
Yeah. And
and the bird flight deflectors, that's only because they want to do it. I mean, they have to do it for some of their federal stuff, but that's not nothing that we require, but they want to put it, good for them.
And that's to keep a bird from shearing itself off.
Yep.
Yeah.
Shouldn't laugh, right, Jerry?
Yeah. And that's to make sure they see it when they're flying. So those are in here.
You know, when I was reading the testimony, Chris Miller had said that there was going to be bird diversion devices on all but 13 miles. And the 13 miles, I believe he excluded, were the area through the Badlands, which I thought was curious that that was an area where that wouldn't have them.
You know, I usually defer to the Fish and Wildlife Service on where they want those diverters placed. And I think Commission's pretty much done that in the past. And Fish and Wildlife, they have somebody that actually looks at this and...
Okay.
And says, this is where we need diverters.
And we have that right in the order, done prior to construction with consultation with U.S. Fish and Wildlife.
With Fish and Wildlife Service.
Okay.
That we had something in here.
And then I guess the next point, too, will be installed in high-risk areas determined in consultation with WASH. Okay, so we've got it in here twice.
There was also going to be surveys, too. Additional surveys prior to construction, yet if I remember right, for eagles and migratory birds. And there was consultation with Fish and Wildlife Services on that.
Hmm. Okay. Anything else on the eagles?
In my mind, that's something I defer to Fish and Wildlife Service on, too, as to what kind of setbacks they want and what kind of limitations they want to put on time and things like that for construction to minimize impacts, avian impacts.
Just on a sidebar, in some of the cases that we've had that become really challenging, in this case, the Fish and Wildlife is engaged. But some of the cases we've had in the past, they choose not to engage because there's no federal nexus, but we still want their opinion, and it's hard to get their opinion sometimes. So the fact that they're engaged in this one is a good thing, because oftentimes we're looking for some of their expertise, but they choose not to participate in some of the projects. Mm-hmm. We've sent in some of the wind farms, they've not chosen to participate.
There was something I kind of recall about that. Something about biologists on site or something.
What was that?
I can't right off the top of my head recall if it was for 100% of the project, but there was testimony and that during construction there will be biologists present too and in consultation with them about timing and placement and construction methods depending on time of year and any other wildlife impacts.
Do we want to add that to 29?
Well, that's where I think 29, it says determining consultation with the Western Area Power Administration biologist. I mean, I think that's the biologist that's talked about.
Okay.
So I think it's in there, but
yep, 29, second part.
All right. Okay, then the next one I wanted to talk about was the one landowner. There weren't a lot of landowners that came forward with specific requests for changes to our hearings. But there was this one, Wayne Haig. And Jerry, I wanted to talk to you, wanted you to walk through his case and what we know about what can or cannot be done to address his concerns. He has a farm near Tioga, is it? He came toward Williams County.
Tioga Loop, but it was near another little town there.
Ray.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he had hoped to have the line moved off, not off his land, but off of his family's homestead site. The line was said to go through there. And I read all the correspondence from him back and forth to the company, and it's at one point it sounded like they were had an opportunity to get it resolved and taken care of, but then it sort of fell through, and it's not clear to me what happened. So can you provide more information on that? And the guy came to our hearing. He provided a lot of information. I want to give him the respect of knowing that we followed through as much as we could to try to address his concerns.
Okay, I'm still looking at the roads and stuff that's in the area and trying to follow what his alternatives were. But the company has said in response to that they can't go around that area at all. I mean, can see there's a section 27 in the range 97, township 156, square there, and he has the southeast quarter of that.
And did you say section 27?
Yeah.
It doesn't look like the line goes through. Oh, wait, I'm looking at the wrong one. Okay.
You see the second, 2.5 sections over from the left side of the picture?
Mm-hmm.
Along the power line there. The southeast quarter is a little bit lighter shade than the rest of the section.
Okay, that's his.
Yeah, and there's some wetlands there in the corner of that.
Well, it'd look like wetlands to the north and to the south. A river body of some type.
Mm.
So anyway, you see the section, it runs along the half section line there, the line does. And it's running straight all along that area. The company said is that they have the easements, all of the landowners like this arrangement for this section along there except for him. And for them to move it in any direction off of that half section line around there will upset everybody else. The other point made, he said that there was some oil wells and stuff along this another road here. I haven't been able to find out exactly where they're at or see exactly where they're at, but he wanted to follow along that road.
I've got him on this map.
With these oil wells. And the company said that they explored that option.
Jerry, can I interrupt? Yeah. What page is that?
18.
It is,
26 of 29. 29.
Is that different from the map I gave?
No, it's just
it's
bigger.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Go ahead, Jerry.
So he's saying that that road should be an energy corridor and you should put this transmission line in with the oil wells and the other stuff that's over there. And the company says that there's so much stuff over there that to put the line in there, they'd have to be zigzagging back and forth across the road with it, and it's just not a practical place to put it. And
is the clearance on these about 30 feet? I can't remember from the hearings, but I know that's normal.
I think, if I'm remembering right, the NESC minimum clearance was 28-something.
I was thinking then you create an overhead issue as well.
Usually there'd be a little bit of a cushion on that.
Yeah. Jerry, correct me if I'm wrong, but there was also testimony that the company actually looked to see if they could move it and actually ran into a pretty significant objection.
That was the other landowners around that were not happy with it moving off of that line. So I think they did look to see if they could put it somewhere else, and nobody else in the neighborhood was liking it coming off of that section line or that half section line. So as it is, it's coming across the edge of the property with the poles going on the property line pretty as much as they could get.
So what if the the poles went on the other guy's property, just north of there. How does a company decide to what we want to go eminent domain across this fellow versus the guy across the way?
I don't have a detailed response from each landowner as to what they would say in particular. All I have is the generic response from the company that the other landowners, this is where they want it.
In addition to the landowners, the water bodies become into play, too, if you get up too far off that route.
Yeah, just north, it doesn't look like there's any water across the way there. But
it doesn't look like there's anything that couldn't be spanned. But you don't know that from just looking here.
It was interesting, though, out of all the miles of transmission line, that there was really, I just think of that one landowner that came in compared to what we had in some of the other transmission lines. So overall, I think they did a very good job working with the mm-hmm. landowners.
The one, this one, and there was a few in the Kildare Mountain area that, at least one there that testified in opposition.
One came, he was for it.
Well, there was several that were for it, yeah. So, have we exhausted the alternatives for this fellow?
You know, I think that we have as much as we can get through there. We're taking the company's word on the landowners around there getting upset about moving it anywhere. Mm-hmm. But looking at the picture, it makes some sense to that. It comes right down those section lines pretty nicely.
Brian, you've done other orders of such and worked with very specific issues like this. How has the commission handled it in the past?
Usually we'll try to go through, and if there's a rationale to make an adjustment on a segment north or south or something, we'll certainly have looked at it. But in something as, quite honestly, as focused as this, I think that the fact that the other landowners, they have easements in place, that it's just one of those issues that just gets tough, that nobody wants the power line. We had several cases in the Minn Kota line that where we had willing landowners on all these sides, but these folks in the middle didn't want it anyway, no how, but it had to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the fact that we just had this one concern, which is a valid concern perhaps, but I think it looks like a pretty good route. When you look at the crop mix even too, it just looks like that'd be a natural spot for it. And that's one of those that the micro-siting is, that they get out there and start, the company talks with this individual and they want to make micro-adjustments on the property, I think they'll usually come back to us.
Yeah.
But this, isn't this right down the property line?
It looks like it was. So there's another map here.
So that's where it becomes challenging, is that you take it off his property and you put it in someone else's. Mm-hmm. There would have to be a good rationale other than I just don't want it. And we've seen that sometimes with airfields, with irrigation systems, those things that will prompt you to may have to make an adjustment to it. But no, I think this is...
Well, and this fellow was not necessarily saying I don't want it because he offered other land. He just doesn't want it across. He wants to protect his family's homestead. So yeah.
So it is the property line right there between Haig's property and the next door
Bergstrom's.
Neighbor
Bergstrom.
It just seemed if he offers up more of his property, it would make it deeper into the homestead.
That was
the
quarter that they homesteaded in.
Yeah, he wanted it south of there. In one of these pictures, it shows an alternative route. Going through sections 35, 34, 33, 32, 31 across that area. And
I
it involves quite a few landowners.
Well, and there are some residences to play to the south, too. We try and fund those corridors. We keep X amount of feet from residences. You go to the south a little bit, there's some residents that come into play, too. In section 35, 34, 33.
34,
is that a residence?
34
and 35.
And then working your way back up, there's some more, too.
Well, I guess I would urge the company as they go through the micro-siting process, if there's a way to address his concerns on this particular route, if this is the way we go, then I would hope that they would make every effort to do that. All right. Then the last big area that we heard a lot of talk about, everything I've talked about so far was people opposed and wanting changes to the route. But there was also, in fairness, a fair number of people who came urging approval of this for reasons of reliability and need, et cetera. And the one piece in our order where, to me, there are more alternatives for this route if Watford City wasn't so desperately in need of power. From what I can tell on this case and what I've heard and read and heard over and over in testimony, Watford City is the key piece that makes it more challenging, because in order to get to Watford City, you either have to go through the Badlands or through the Indian Reservation. And there's just no easy access to Watford City. And that's where, you know, one of the key load demands is. So we heard from the head of McKenzie Electric and at our hearing in Kildare, talking about 300% growth since 2005 and 69% in 2012 alone, and how they were, what I was glad to refresh my memory of, they talked about load restrictions from WAPA in the past and the need for this line to prevent that in the future, and referenced a time in the last year or two where they had a load restriction in place and had to shed load. And one of the first places they went was the gas plants, and asked them to reduce their compression load, which then sent all the wells to flare that were being served by that. And so I just wanted to bring that up again, because I think it's central in my decision making that, you know, that the needs of Watford City are you know, wrapped up in this case and make it more challenging from a siting perspective, because it's not an easy place to get to. I was going to suggest in our order where we talk about some of the needs at the beginning. After six, point number six, we talk about some of the alternatives. Could we add to the findings of fact some of the needs that we heard from McKenzie County Electric for Watford City specifically?
If you're asking me, Julie, that's fine to me, as long as it's in the record. The Charlie Creek sub is a big deal, too. And I think one thing that's, it's not in the record, but as we watch this unfold about how many megawatts we need, I think they're going to need another 345 around the east side of the lake and across the top. And I think they're going to need another transmission line through the Kildare Mountains. So I think this is one of many projects that's coming. But can we do that, Mitch? Can you put in a need finding based on, or at least that, maybe not in a finding so much, but we could put... so-and-so from McKenzie Electric testified.
Well, if somebody testified, is that not a finding of fact? If they testified under oath?
There were a couple, there were co-ops that testified from McKenzie and...
Upper Missouri came down too, didn't they?
Yeah, and mm-hmm. Montrell Williams, I think, and... that did say how it was needed, and they talked about the load growth and stuff that they're experiencing a little bit.
Well, there was so much talk about the, you know, alternative forms of generation and, you know, going the other way, going on the other side of the lake, going up to Minot and over to Williston, all these other alternatives that leave out the needs of Watford City. And I just think we need to spell out what some of those real needs are. I mean, the McKenzie County Electric said they're already under consistent contingent load. They're already consistent contingent load limited from WAPA.
And I think this line with the alternatives went through Watford City either way. It was the area south of Watford.
The Charlie Creek sub, right?
I think south of Watford City in that area, there wouldn't be... The preferred alternative comes up Highway 85. And there's an area there south of Watford City where it turns and goes left to Watford City into that area that would not be served by the alternatives if you compare the two pictures. And so I think it's the area south of Watford City that we have mentioned in paragraph number 6.
Well, D and B both serve Watford City, but the, you know, one of the macro corridors, E, didn't, and going the other way around the reservation wouldn't. So there were other discussions that wouldn't serve Watford.
Okay.
The question, I think, was to me of whether we can add that in there, and I would tell you it's not necessarily a legal requirement, so the question becomes, does the commission want something mentioned in there? If we were to add something in there, I would suggest putting it at probably at the end of paragraph 4 rather than paragraph 6 where we discuss the load growth.
Sure, I would be fine with that.
Okay.
Commissioner, may I ask Randy, Commissioner Christman? That sound reasonable to you?
I'm just looking at 4 here.
See,
that's a better place.
But at the end of 6, you talk about the proposed project provides transmission services to areas south of Watford City, which would not be served by the alternative. That's why, to me, why is it important to Watford City? What have we heard regarding the need in Watford City and south? That's why I thought that would be a good spot for it. But I don't feel strongly either way, wherever it is. I just feel that that's a key piece of the facts that we heard, and I'd like to have some quantifiable information in there about what the needs are there that we heard.
Sure. I think we can go back into the record and pull some language out to add into there.
Mitch, you got a thought?
I was just kind of going through the language in my head and seeing if I could put it out there to see if it's kind of what the commissioners are looking at. Just several local cooperatives provided testimony about the energy needs they're experiencing. You know, for instance, Watford City, and give some of those examples, because yeah. I have a recollection of there being some discussion of even losing a substation or something. I remember talking about a substation on the corner south of town and something happening, but I don't remember all the mm-hmm. specifics now. Is that what you're looking at? I mean, you acknowledge that what we generally heard from all of the cooperatives that were there, and then specifically, you know, cite some examples from the one that the McKenzie cooperative?
Correct. Yep. Okay, then my final area. How are we doing? Oh, sorry.
Is there a distinction that needs to be made? You know, I
I know that a lot of Watford City has to be being served by McKenzie Electric, but when in our conversation here and we just threw out Watford City, I'm assuming that the old traditional part of Watford City is probably MDU, which wouldn't have anything to do with this. And so I assume we want to talk about McKenzie Electric as opposed to Watford
sure.
City.
Yeah. Thanks, Randy, for correcting that, because I think of that as the region of Watford City.
I think that the new load growth that we're addressing here is not the MDU service growth,
sure.
but it's the McKenzie Electric.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think this line would help MDU out, too.
I just think once you plug it in, it's going to benefit everybody.
Yeah.
Just looking to energize that Grand Forks to Senator Grand Forks line. It'll stabilize the whole grid.
Mitch, can you just... Okay, sorry. I'm done with that piece. Are you guys?
Yep.
Okay. Can you talk about the other concern that we heard frequently, and I reread in the record, was the need for alternatives. And what I've concluded in this project and the siting of a project like this and approval and construction, et cetera, is a joint effort. We're deferring to a lot of experts outside of our realm to do their part. And I think the alternatives and the study of those is one of those areas where we're deferring to a process that's happening outside of our process. Can you talk about that from what our requirements are and remind me what our requirements are for studying alternatives?
Yes. And I it may be just parsing words, but I guess that's what lawyers do. But
the good ones.
So... You know, when you talk about deferring to other agencies, what other agencies have their responsibilities, and those responsibilities are ongoing. Being that they're ongoing, you know, additional information may come up that we didn't have in our record. That's why we leave it still contingent on those other mm-hmm. agency approvals in case, you know, something comes up later that, you know, causes a concern. As far as alternatives go, the way our siting act is in North Dakota is the company comes to us with an application for a corridor and a route. It is the commission's role to evaluate that route and corridor. We discuss alternatives when avoidance areas are in play or some other criteria where we may have to find that there is no reasonable alternative in order to site near an avoidance area. But we don't, or at least the law is not written the way that we go out and say, well, it'd be better if you moved it 10 miles south and then go 5 miles north. You know, particularly when there's not some sort of evidence that there is a better route. We don't go and pick different routes for, you know, getting a power line from point A to point B. So we typically evaluate the route that's brought to us under our law as it's written. Unless it impacts an avoidance area, then we have to determine whether the company has proven that there's no reasonable alternative to impact the avoidance area. Some avoidance areas.
No, and that's a key point, though, because I did a lot of work with NEPA back in the Jarhead days, and NEPA process, you go through with your preferred alternative, your no-action alternative, and you have to develop a range, and you carry forward some, and there's a definite federal process that you follow to get to your preferred alternative and justify it, where that's not us. We get a project, and we often hear in the CapEx line, I heard all the time in Fargo, well, you should move it here. Well, it's not about that. It's you have a route in front of you, you either accept or reject, or modify slightly to do what you just said, the exclusion avoidance area. But it's just they're just so different. That's why I like the idea of just putting the getting to the finding of no significant impact or mitigation, because we've seen that in the Verendry Electric Wind Farm, that they have many alternatives to go through as long as they got to the end, the Fonzie, and they had to mitigate some of that. And Basin may be asked to mitigate here too. But the alternative process, which some might appeal, is a NEPA process for them to appeal, not our process.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I've always seen it, I guess. And it's a key clarification to get out there when we vote on this, too.
And in the order, we identify the avoidance areas and go through each one and how there was no reasonable alternative. Correct? So Can I just ask for you guys to walk through just a couple of those, first being the Little Missouri Grasslands Management Area, number 24 on the order. I'd like to talk about A, B, and D, just so my colleagues know how much longer I think this will go on.
Hey, whatever
that'll takes, be the end.
Whatever it takes to get to you to support this, I'm happy to get there.
We talk about that right here, paragraph 24. Is that
24, it? Correct.
Do you have those avoidance area maps here?
This. If I'm understanding this correctly, if I'm reaching the right conclusion on the Little Missouri Grasslands Management Area, basically we're this will be contingent on the Forest Service permit.
I think that's why I read it, and there's nowhere else to go.
Jerry? And they're following existing electrical and transmission lines. And Highway 85.
My wife.
It looks like it'll be this little bit right over here.
I don't know why you're My recollection is through the grasslands, the company has to follow that energy or transmission corridor where there's already other power lines, and they mm-hmm. have to get approval from the Forest Service.
Okay. Yeah, that's...
In my mind, the Forest Service told them this is where they want them to cross this at.
And they'll be providing a permit, a special use permit.
We hope.
When they complete their... review.
And if they don't, then they can't place.
Then they can't go there.
The Forest Service permit's a requirement.
Correct. Okay. Then the next one, 25, Lewis and Clark Wildlife Management Area. This was selected in consultation with the Corps of Engineers, U.S. Fish and Wildlife.
That's by the.
And so.
The problem with that one is.
Got
for the river crossing, you are unable to get across that river there. Let's see.
You've either got Williston.
Yeah.
To the east, and.
So it goes through a physical description in 25 mm-hmm. of the area and shows that that's the only place that they can get through there.
I'm just taking a look at the map here, and there is a huge floodplain area, at least to the west of that area, right? This is the area here, right, Jerry?
Yeah,
I remember the testimony of the constructability issues to the west.
And also, as it states in the bottom part of 25, that you've got Highway 85 going through that area, along with several existing transmission lines and pipelines too. So it's already that is the corridor for crossing the river there.
Okay. And then tell me where we walk through areas that have recreational significance. Do we have a bullet or a specific paragraph on that?
I think the river was...
Because it seems like we spell out each of the other ones.
Maybe we don't. Do we have something in there on that? Maybe we don't. I think we have to look a little more on that.
Okay, well, we don't have to do that right now, but let's do that and talk about it on Monday.
The entire area has recreational significance.
Michael, what are you trying to get at, Julia? I missed your recreational area. I didn't know.
We go through each one of those avoidance areas in the order, right, specifying how there's no alternative. So we don't, except for that one.
Like a separate finding, you're thinking?
Separate commentary on how that's, you know, meets the criteria.
Let me just jot that down as a note.
Okay.
Inside of 25, you could maybe put it there.
Could possibly do that, because those are the obvious, some of the obvious.
Is covered within the other one.
Okay.
Well, maybe you just spell out that the areas with recreational significance include the Little Missouri Grasslands Management Area and Lewis and Clark Wildlife Management Area, which we've already discussed how there's no alternative.
Right.
So just, but some statement on that piece, since we've covered all the other ones, I think. Should be included.
That sounds fine to me. Okay. Randy, is that okay with you?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Good.
Anything else, Jerry?
I think we got it.
Okay, well, I don't think I have any more questions.
Okay, so this is on for vote Wednesday. Do you want another work session before Wednesday or make the changes and staff it?
Yeah, if you want to just recirculate with those changes next week, that would be great. I don't think another work session is necessary.
Okay, Randy, you need anything else?
Just
especially if you start bleeding.
One question for Jerry. Has there ever been another update since we were at Tioga about the...
The airport?
No, well, I guess that too. But the number of easements they've acquired, I believe at the time it was like 77% of the owners and 77% of the land.
I think we've gotten a couple updates on that. One of them just a couple days ago. And, you know, I was going to bring it in here, and I don't think I did, but it broke it out into the three areas, and it was like 90-some percent on all of them. Overall, they said it was a 90%, and then they broke that out by area, and in some areas it was way greater than 90%.
I don't need an answer now. You can just forward that along, though.
Okay, I could pull it up here if you give me a second on the tablet and tell you exactly what it was.
It would be nice to have Mason give you something by Tuesday next week of their hot off the press, what that updated number
I
is.
I think that number is pretty hot off the press that they just filed.
Yeah.
Okay. You never know. Mike and the guys might have been out there just over lunch.
Negotiating.
I got it. Oh, you got it in your hand.
What was it?
97% from Antelope Valley to Charlie Creek, 81% from Charlie Creek to Judson, 92% from Judson to Nesset.
Can we say that once more, Mitch? 97 from Antelope Valley to Charlie Creek?
The total was, as of April 10th, 90% of the total landowners had signed easements. So, and then it says on a per-segment basis, Antelope Valley to Charlie Creek is 97%. Oh. Charlie Creek to Judson, 81%. Judson to Nesset, 92%.
Just the last one more time is what?
92%.
And the one in the middle that's lower, I presume, is because they would still need to get the federal land, and that has to go through that process.
They were excluding that whole area. Because that's going to be the last one they get.
Okay.
Is it part of the percentage, though?
I don't know.
No. They weren't including that.
Okay.
So the 82% is private landowners?
No, it's the entire route, but that 81, I want to look at the maps, but I believe that 81% is lower because there's a large section in there that would be the easements from the federal government, which won't come until the very end.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay. Anything else, Commissioner?
That's it. Thank you for your digging through the record and pursuing the different pieces of information and taking the time.
Andy,
appreciate it.
Going once, going twice. Okay. Last dance. All right. We'll go ahead and close the work session on case number. Of course, I always turn my glasses off, huh? Case number PU 11-696. I should have that memorized by now. Thank you all.